Welcome to Kaya Radio. My name is Joshi, and I am happy to be sitting in the studio today with two amazing people. One of them is Lisa. You might know Lisa from the Tab family, from the Perth scene, The Outsiders, Creative Discover.
Yes, that's
what
it.
What else?
I was going to say Kuda Mike.
And of course, Kuda Mike. We've got a special guest in the studio today as well. So we've got Bastien. Bastien is an artist from Reunion Island, and he goes by the name of Oris, and he just gave us his beautiful CD with a beautiful cover, and it's titled Chimera.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to say it?
Chimera, Chimera.
Chimera?
However
what,
you
what does it mean?
Well, a chimera, you know, it's kind of like those hybrid creatures, like you know, we have a lot of
mythical
like that. Yeah, mythical creatures, you know,
yeah,
like the body of a lion and the head,
yeah,
of
right
a, and
is this specific to Reunion Island or
not at all, actually?
No. Yeah.
But it's specific to this album because it's
okay.
what I talk about, because I think we are all chimeras.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, because
mm-hmm,
we're
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah,
we're really struggling between our bestiality that we tend to forget,
mm-hmm,
the way we call ourselves Homo sapiens, sapiens,
mm-hmm,
which don't always sapiens the way we should,
and
also the, you know, human 3.0 with all this technology everywhere. So
yeah. That is so interesting. So Bastien is here He just dropped by in Perth, really. He hasn't done any shows here, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Not yet. Yes, but we hope to have him in the future for shows here in Perth. If you go on his Instagram, your Instagram name would be it's Bastien on Instagram. Isn't
well,
it?
Yeah, my personal one is Bastien Picot, but actually, if you want to see more stuff, it's Aurus Music.
Aurus
so Aurus like Taurus without the T. So Aurus Music, and then it's all my social media, YouTube channel, and everything.
And if you and I guarantee you will love what you hear. Yeah. So
thank you.
So Bastien, so tell us about. I guess talk us through how the music, when the music thing started for you, how it started. Yeah, just talk us through that.
Wow.
That's how far is that?
Well, it's as far as I can remember, actually.
Yeah.
I really always loved music.
Yeah.
As soon as I could, you know, write, I would try and write lyrics and inventing my own melodies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it started when I was a kid. My grandfather used to play like instruments, like traditional music from Reunion, like Sega and all of that.
Yep.
He used to play the accordion and also like mandolin, stuff like that. All of his children, except my own father, played like music or liked writing poetry. My father, he loved cars, and you know,
I see.
Yeah, so he didn't listen to music. He didn't do any music. And actually, I think it just made a lip.
From
generations, and so me and my brother were into music.
Oh, nice! So your brother's a musician.
He is a singer as well.
Oh, yeah.
We both ended up doing music. So first, you know, it was like at high school and everything, putting a band together with some friends.
Yeah.
And then at some point, I started to, to go to the university and do studies, which had nothing to do with music. And I realized, like, no, I really want to do music.
What did you study?
I studied English
while. Yeah.
And I realized that I love languages and all of that, but, like, I really wanted to do music. And so I managed to have a scholarship for a music school in Bordeaux in the south of France. At a school called Le Siam. So I studied there for 3 years, and then I taught there after that. So my teacher went on maternity leave. And so I replaced her on the spot over there, and so I started to work on stage with different kind of bands, different kind of genres, soul music, funk, world music, jazz, all of that. And at the same time, I was forming myself to become like a vocal teacher and vocal vocal coach. And there it went.
So with the vocal coaching, because I know you got to Perth, I think, 6 months ago, and then you traveled like Indonesia and so forth, and you're almost at the end of your trip now, but when you got here, you did some teaching and in some primary schools, I believe, here as well, right? Like
it was more high school.
Actually,
I worked with the French Alliance, and I gave some musical workshops in high school in Perth, so many of them, like maybe 8 or 10 workshops. So
I
wouldn't name all of the schools, but it was super nice being able to work like with all of those students, and most of the time they had also like French lessons.
I see.
So I would try and do the workshop like in French, or try to translate they would have like a great experience with a musical experience, but also like a language experience. And it was super fun. We managed to do some circle songs, some polyphonic work.
Is that something you do back home as well?
It is. Yep. It is something I do. I now prioritize the gigs I do on stage, like the creative writing and the studio, and then the tour, the mm-hmm. touring and everything. Mm-hmm. But every time I got a chance and every time I have time, that's I love to do like workshops, master yeah. classes, and all of that, because transmitting is something yeah. I've always loved to do. And
it's in you, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now you've also, you know, like obviously fast forward, you got to travel quite a bit. You've played in different cities, and I know I heard you played in Johannesburg, you played in Swaziland. Where else have you performed? And in Melbourne as well, right?
Like Melbourne with the Black Jesus Experience. That was awesome.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
in Canberra also, we played at a festival over there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I got to play in Europe, so mainly France, mm-hmm. Switzerland. Mm-hmm. I played in Cape Verde, Cabo Verde last year. I played in India, played in, like you said, South Africa and mm-hmm. Eswatini.
Mm-hmm.
I played in Spain, Estonia as well. I'm glad my music is starting to spread a little bit.
And I mean, would your music mostly be in Creole and French?
It is not.
It is not. Yeah.
It is actually in Creole and English.
Creole and English.
Yeah, which
I see.
Is
okay.
Pretty yeah. unexpected for yeah. people, but
I
don't know why, but I feel like like I said, I had a passion for languages, and especially like I loved English. That's mm-hmm. why I started studying it in the mm-hmm. first place, but mm-hmm. I think these two languages they respond and they work together for a weird reason, because they barely have any roots, like common roots.
Are you talking about English and Creole?
And Creole. Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the sound of it, the way they're put together, I don't know. And to me, it makes sense, because mm-hmm. one of them, it's looking forward towards a language that is not my own, but mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. I like and that I've always loved to learn and to speak and to write, because I've listened to so many artists in speaking English, you know, like Anglophones and all of that. So this is what has nourished me in a way. So and there is also the root one, which is more like Creole, the Creole from Reunion.
Yeah.
And this feels closer to me than the French, even if French is my mother language as well. But like Creole is like my deep roots, because it's only spoken in Reunion where I grew up. And
yeah. And who were some of the people, I guess, that influenced you in, you know, like in Creole singers that you listened to and you...
Many. I guess... One of the most well-known musicians and singer and poet from Reunion would be Daniel Waraud.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing, and he really is a poet. He has a way to also go back and find those old Creole words and put them back into his writing and his so a lot of people are like, I don't get what he's saying when he says this.
Even Creole speaking people.
Because we can see nowadays, even in France, that the French language is
evolving
and mm-hmm. taking so many words from English, you know, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same in Reunion. Got the Creole is getting more and more modernized and mixed with French and with English and mm-hmm. all of that. And what I like about his work is that he tries to go back and find like those old words that are, you know, that we tend to forget and put them back. And that's what I like to do as well. It's kind of like saving words, saving your own roots, preserving your culture.
Preserving the language in a way.
So yeah, it means that it's not going to be... sometimes easy to understand for most people, but at the same time, the more we do it, the more it becomes,
of course,
you know, it's a way to put those words back into our everyday life. And a lot of artists from Reunion do that. There's also mm-hmm. Fabrice Legros, which is a friend and has influenced me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
While other friends like Maya Kamati,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of them are doing this, mm-hmm. and
Now, are these words that are like, you know, if somebody's listening and they do speak Creole, they don't understand the words, are they words that are can they look the words up? Or are these words that are like completely gone? You can't look them up?
No, they can. Yeah. Fortunately, because there are some books some dictionaries and all of that. Because a lot of people have researched all those words. Mm. Because Reunion is a land that was not inhabited in the first place. Mm-hmm. So there was no one on the island. Mm-hmm. And so the story of our island is that we have people that came from Africa, from India, from Europe, from Asia. And so there are books that, even for words that everybody know, that tell you, do you know where these words come from? Yeah. Well, actually, it has an Indian root. And that word has a root from Madagascar. Yeah, and that word has a root from Africa. Yeah. And so you can learn about the words that everybody use. And you also can learn about words that a few people use today. And then you can look it up. And Daniel Waro also wrote the lyrics to his songs, mm-hmm. and with the translations. So if you want to, you can go look it up. What's cool. That's a way for people to be curious and be like, what's that word? Just go and look into it on the internet or on those books, and then be like, yeah, sounds good. I'm going to use it again, you know?
And given that you... Obviously, with English, it's a language that you've learned and that you're continuing to learn. With Creole, by the sounds of it, is a language where you are constantly learning new words as well. So between the two, do you find one easier to do than the other? Like, do you find it slightly easier to write in Creole, or do you find it slightly easier to write in English? Like, given all that. Or is it just, does it just flow seamlessly for you because you've done it for a long time?
I'm not sure. I would say that maybe, well, it depends on the gibberish that I do. No, it's true. When I write a song, the melody comes to me first, and I just gotcha. Mumble sounds and words. And sometimes I can see that it's coming in gibberish English, you know, because the sounds of it, it's like, okay, so I love to keep those sounds that came to my mind with the melody, and try to find
words
and find
that match
sense
them.
and try to match, you
know.
Oh wow,
this. So that's your creative process pretty much,
most of the time. Wow. And sometimes this gibberish is like Creole, and sometimes it's like in between, so I don't know if there's one coming
before
other. It's just, and sometimes it comes like in the English form, and I'm just you know, being like, yeah, but I want this to be in Creole because I have something to say, and I know I will say it better in Creole,
and it makes
so
a
sometimes
connection.
I just change it, and I'm trying to find the sounds that come as close as possible to the English gibberish that came here. So it's always a compromise between the intuition, so the first you know, burst of it, the first way it came out, and with those sounds, and a compromise with the very meaning of what I want to convey, because for me it's all about that, also conveying like messages and things that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find you very fascinating. I'm just sitting here in awe, and I think I saw a snippet of something on the Instagram, and just the music and the sounds that you work with. And then Shoshi did touch on a little bit of your creative process, but do you think that's something that you could come up with on the spot, or is it something that it takes you a while to get there? Because you're talking about listening to sounds and music, and you know, how long does it take you to create maybe a song, or is this an album?
Or like this project, for example, this project called Auros.
Well, if you want a funny story, before that, I I had some music. Well, I played with different groups and everything, but then mm-hmm. my own music, I had some music under my name, Bastien Picot. Mm-hmm. I wanted to change it, and I didn't know what to find, what, you know. And actually, the first song mm-hmm. on the album is the first song that I wrote for this album.
Okay.
And it's called Horus, like mm-hmm. H-O-R-U-S. Mm-hmm. And Horus, the Eye of Horus, the mm-hmm. Egyptian god, mm-hmm. this is a symbol for intuition, mm-hmm. For seeing things beyond matter, mm-hmm. and seeing, you know, the unpalpable. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what music is, mm-hmm. because you receive something, you send something, but you can't touch it,
yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. But also, it has another meaning, because this is the very first song mm-hmm. that I sort of channeled, because...
Ever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because the gibberish that I did was the actual lyrics. So it's just kind of like an automatic writing, but wow. it was like an automatic singing the melody with the words coming. And the only thing I did is that I just wanted to translate some of those sentences in Creole in the chorus.
And then you changed them.
And in the pre-chorus as well. Mm-hmm. So I just changed that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the meaning and the sense of the song, and it's talking about intuition.
Mm.
So to answer your question, yeah. it depends. Because on this very song, it just like came all at the same time. Mm. And that was like a first experience yeah. for me. Because normally there is like the melody... I love to improvise. I did a lot of jazz, so mm-hmm. you could play anything and I would improvise on mm-hmm. it and find melodies. So mm-hmm. finding a melody is pretty easy for me, but mm-hmm. then I have to choose from the melodies mm-hmm. I did, because like I'm like, yeah, I like this idea, but I also like this idea, and yeah, I like yeah, this yeah, idea yeah, too. Yeah, so
yeah, yeah.
that's the first step for yeah. me, is like, okay, what's the melody? You know, the yeah. melody.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's this, and then... Most of the time, when I come with this, I have an idea of all the chords as well, and mm-hmm. also what I want to talk about. And yeah. then it can take time. Sometimes it's pretty easy, because mm-hmm. the words are, you know, are almost in their place. So mm-hmm. I keep one or two words, and the sentence flows like that. And sometimes, no, I'm struggling to put, you know, everything in mm-hmm. that. And so it can take a while. But then... I think, it really depends. It really depends.
Because it sounds like that's kind of like a spiritual experience, that song, that you
it
made.
It is. Yeah. It totally is.
Yeah.
Something that aligned, because I think when things come to you, you have to be also ready to receive them as well.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, I hope you will like it. And actually, it was such a... spiritual experience mm-hmm. that this is how I named myself. You know, my stage name became Horus, not spelled H-O-R-U-S, because obviously, as you can see it, I'm not an Egyptian god. but yeah, because Horus, spelled A-U-R-U-S, there was the symbol and the strength of that experience with this song. Mm-hmm. And there is also this... you know, with Horus, A-U-R, it goes towards aura and all of that, and it's mm-hmm. still reinforcing the idea of what I feel music is, like mm-hmm. something you can't touch, you just
yeah.
feel, you mm-hmm. just, you,
yeah.
and everybody can feel it, you know?
So given that and that thought process, are you somebody who ever feels, like, this was released in 2021, for example, right?
Yeah.
Like 2021. And do you as an artist feel, and you don't strike me as somebody who does, feel the need that, okay, this was like 2 years ago, I need to have an album. And so, because your process seems like things come to you, and mm-hmm. when they come and when they make sense, that's when you create. Is that correct to assume? Or are you like, oh, it's been 2 years, I need to make another album, blah, blah, blah.
No, well, I'm reminded by the people that surround me in the society that there are deadlines and there is a cycle and
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I'm reminded of that. But yeah, in fact, I'm just trying to be connected to well, to myself and to what I'm leaving and what I'm going through, and just do things how I want to do them. For instance, what I'm working on right now is four different EPs at the same time with different genres. And I know that strategically a lot of people would say, well, that's dangerous. And I'm like, yeah, fuck dangerous. So sorry about the F word. So I'm like, you know what? I want to do what I want to do. And I, you know, so the first one is more like an atmospheric pop with more like guitars and all that. So it's more acoustic, organic, I would say. The second one is like super urban music, like I rap and all of that. So which is not new, but it's not what
slightly
I've been doing,
ordinary,
like
most
of my career.
Yeah,
and there's another more like rock experimental. There's many aspects of myself, and it's all gonna be combined in an album called Prism. Prism, because all of that is a different wavelength of what makes me, and and so that's my prism. You know, it's how I see the world, and also how all of those layers that you know make me. And I know that all of that is gonna come together on stage, and I know that it's gonna come together finally. You know, I mean, in a nice way, and not like what the fuck, you know. But so yeah, I just want to do what I want to do.
So your live acts, are they a big consideration when you put projects like this together? Like, do you look forward and think, how is this going to look when I, or is that part of the process, or
does it come naturally?
Well, it's for this album, for instance, I didn't think about how it would be live, except that well, I didn't want to think about the live.
Yes.
Like on the first EP that I did under my name, Bastien Picot, I know that I wanted that everything that's recorded would be played live.
I see.
So I had another band, we had like guitar, bass, drum and everything. And so the arrangement that I did would be really similar to the live experience.
Gotcha.
On that one, I was like, I want to free myself.
Okay.
I want to do what I want to do. And so on this album, you can hear horn sections. You can hear many stuff that obviously is not played live, because, you know, I don't have the means to have horn sections. So, not yet. So,
it will come.
So I was like, okay, it's fine. You know, we can have some sequences on live, play some stuff on the SPDS X. So all of the sounds that are, you know, put in an electronic shell, all of that, we can play on the SPD. So so it can be played live, but there are not organic sounds and all of that. So actually for this live, I was like, I don't want to think about the live for the writing process. I just want to do what I want to do, and we'll see how it will come live, you know, how we can make it happen. And we managed to do it, so it's fine. Now for... now that we've toured quite a lot with this album, of course, now on all the songs that I'm writing, there's a little voice in my head being like, oh, that could be like the beginning of a show, and then so I'm starting to think about it, but it's not influencing the creative process,
okay?
Because I still want to be as free as possible. So if there are horns or like a choir of 40 people, I will put it on the album, and that's fine. And we'll find a way to put it live. A way or the other.
So given that you do, you know, like the project that you're talking about, and it's different genres, where do you find, like with your traveling, now that you've traveled, where did you find that your music was like the best reception for your music, in your opinion? Where did you go and you was like, man, these people are like...
Well, to be honest, it is a good question. To be honest, I think the most unexpected, because obviously I've had a great welcome from my peers and my people in Reunion.
Of course.
When I played at the best, like the biggest festival of the island, which is Sakifo Festival. So that was like, you know.
Yeah, you can't compare it to anywhere
else. It was super, it was intense for me. Yeah. But it was South Africa, actually, in Joburg. Really? Yeah, Baseline Festival.
Yeah, yeah. We're both from South Africa, by the way.
Yeah. I played there and I was like, I was like, am I Michael Jackson?
Really?
But we love the music.
Yeah, yeah. You guys love music. Yeah. So even if, I mean, I think nobody or a few, but nobody knew my music or whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I started to play. We started to play. I started to sing and all that. And then this mass of people just came in front of the stage.
Wow.
And were super into it. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, wow. Crazy. And I was like, what the? And when I went out of the stage, same. Like, people kept saying, man, that was, I mean, I was like, wow, I have to come back here. And actually, the Baseline Festival organizer, he told me as well, because afterwards he knows him. He's the one who puts this festival together.
Yeah.
And he told me, man, I knew it would work, but it was crazy. I think you have to come back. You have to come back. And so I probably will come back this year, hopefully.
Yeah.
And if not, soon, because there was, that was amazing.
Oh, wow.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I've gotten that a lot from different people, though, from different parts of Africa. It's good to hear, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes we hear negative stuff about our country.
I don't like hearing negative things.
But yeah.
Oh, that was
good,
like,
to hear positive. And
And you could feel like after that, there was all the shows and everything. Everyone's like really super attentive and really, I mean, it's you know, we all always say, like, being live in front of an audience, it's kind of like a dialogue or whatever. I think it was the best conversation I've had.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was a dialogue.
Wow.
That really was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Lisa's got more questions.
No, I think for me, I'm a little bit blank with questions, because I think the things that come up with for me as well is that you're from Reunion Island, Creole. So I'm from South Africa. I'm from Cape Town. And I'm also talking to someone else who's from Mauritius as well, because they also have the Creole language.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about Creole in itself? Because I know you said it's a little bit of Indian, a little bit of African. What is Creole, like the language itself?
Actually, if I can add to that question, how different is it from, because in the Caribbean as well, right? Like they speak like French Creole. How different is it, if you know?
Yeah. I do. And it's a super great question, because most people assume that Creole is a language like the same spoken everywhere where they speak Creole. Actually, it is not the case. Creole spoken in Reunion is only spoken in Reunion. Creole from Mauritius is a different Creole. And it's spoken only in Mauritius.
And Cabo Verde as well, right?
They have their Creole. Creole from Guadeloupe or Martinique. Those two Creoles are close and pretty similar. No, I wouldn't say similar, but close. But they're not like our Creole. So you could find some similarities, but the history makes it really different. And there's also this part, like East Coast of the U.S. You know, all of the where there was the influence of French. They say they speak Creole, which is
like
something else.
Like the French Quarter, New Orleans.
Exactly. They say we are Creoles, you know. And so Creole has many definitions. It's kind of like a patois or something like that, you know. So from a language,
or
so
pidgin. In West Africa,
So Creole from Reunion and from Guadeloupe and from Martinique are all Creoles that have French heritage in a way, because it's all of those regions are overseas region of France. It is France, but it's not the same because history is different.
Yeah.
So our Creole in Reunion has this really mixed origins, because that's the story of Reunion Island. Yes. We are all mixed. We all have bloods from all those parts, because there was the sordid history of slavery, like we know. But yeah, there was some slaves from Africa, from Madagascar, from India. There was some Europeans that came, and at some point there was some Portuguese words. I learned that when I was in Mozambique. You know, I was ordering something and I heard like camarão. I was like,
which is prawns.
To say prawns. And actually, the word for prawns in Creole in Reunion is camarão. 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 I was like, so this is Portuguese. All right. Because at some point in the history of Reunion, there was the Portuguese that was there. And also the influence from, with Mozambique, we have like similar instruments sometimes. And so, Creole from Reunion is like really, you can hear a lot of old French words in it. And then there's some words from Madagascar, India, Asia as well, from China, from Europe, so Portugal, but mostly France, I would say. Even English I've learned, because like sometimes we're not sure, but one of the explanation for what we say when we say mukat to mukat someone is like to make fun or to tackle, to make fun of someone. And actually I learned that and I was like, whoa, how did I not think about it? And it might come from to mock at. And I was like, wow. But there's another explanation that could come from Madagascar, from another definition. I don't quite remember. But the two are as probable, you know? And so the linguists are like, there are two probables. Two probabilities for that word. And it's super interesting,
Last question. I'm going to ask you to sell us. I've never been to Reunion Island, have you?
Neither, but no. I would love to.
Please sell us. Sell us your country. And then after you sell us your country, sell us your experience of Australia.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I'm on a mission. So.
It's taking us on a journey.
So. Well, Reunion Island, I would say, is so diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, we have what we call a living together that is really strong, and that you can't really see in many parts of the world. Like, everyone's mixed, you know, so all the religions live peacefully together. We all celebrate like every holiday from every religion, and I mean, in every family, you could have like people from different religions. Just fine. So I find that really heartwarming. Also, like the ethnicity, like the diversity is like inherent.
Just different shades of people.
From even in the same family. Sometimes I show to my friends. I'm like, those are siblings. And they're like, yeah, but from different parents. I'm like, no. They're like, how come? There's one with blue eyes, light skin, like an European. This one looks Arabic, and this one is like dark skinned. And I'm like, yeah, that's Reunion.
You're really describing my family, you know.
Well, that's a reunion.
This is true.
And it's also like a beautiful island. Part of the center of the island is from the World Heritage of the UNESCO. So we have like primary forest with vegetation you can only see over there. We do have beautiful beaches and everything, like lagoon and everything. It's beautiful, but it's maybe less vast than in Mauritius, for instance, because Mauritius is an older island. So it is less mountainous, but more like beaches everywhere. Reunion is really mountainous. Sometimes you could go hike. There's a lot of hikes everywhere. You could hike and just look, and you feel like you're in Jurassic Park. Like, literally. And a lot of people have said that. You know, they're like, whoa, like the... vast. It's like, whoa, it's majestuous. It's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
The mix that I was talking about as far as ethnicity is concerned, mm-hmm. religion is concerned, mm-hmm. culture is concerned, mm-hmm. is also found in food.
Mm.
So believe me, reunion food is just the best because you have like Asian influence, Indian influence, African influence, European influence. It's just the best.
Okay, I'm sold. Yeah.
And the music, we have maloya, which is a traditional music from Reunion.
Yeah.
I mean, this, and it's very little. And compared to Australia,
mm-hmm.
that would be my link to your other questions. We have no harmful animals land.
I see. Yeah.
Like no snakes,
insects, or animals.
Perfect.
Insects and animals. We have no snakes. We have we do have spiders, but none of them are dangerous at all.
Yeah.
We don't have like. Crocodiles or like
sounds perfect.
Whatever. So so you could go hike without you know having to stomp your
fear
feet.
Fear of death.
Well, the only fear of death is if you go too close to the edge and you fall off the cliff. You know. So that's something you could do anywhere. You know, don't go too close to the balcony. But that's it. You know. So that's. Another thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, to answer your question about Australia, wildlife here is just insane. Mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's such a beautiful country / continent because it's so big.
True. Yeah.
I mean, all the beaches and all that, all the wildlife. I had never seen a kangaroo before. I had never seen a wombat.
Wombat.
I'd never seen koalas. I mean, on TV, of course, but like in real life.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I didn't see any snakes, so it's not that bad. I'm okay with that. It's fine. I didn't see redbacks as well, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, all the, you know, I did several road trips while I was here. It was mind blowing. It's just so beautiful, so vast, so rich. I mean, this is what, was the highlight of my trip. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, I met a lot of beautiful people, a lot of great musicians, especially in Melbourne,
because
I felt like Melbourne was more of a hub for you know, music. I felt like that, even though I did jam and did some great music in Sydney as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to come back. That's why I'm trying to put a tour together
because
I want to come back. So I loved it.
You need to come to Perth.
Because you haven't performed in Perth.
Yeah,
I haven't. No.
Yeah. Okay.
But I
we
want
make
to.
That happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please help me come back.
That's gonna be amazing. But that was Bastian. Please go and look him up. Oris, and the album name is called Chimera.
Yeah, Chimera, Chimera.
Chimera.
Oris, A-U-R-U-S, because otherwise you're going to see something else. A-U-R-U-S.
And he's on Instagram.
Yeah, Oris Music, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, YouTube.
Everything.
I have a new music video that just came out, so feel free to look it up.
What's the name of that song?
It's not on this album. It's actually the first track from the very next EP that is gonna come out. The song is called Still Alive, and it's an animation music video that a friend of mine called Etienne Guignard did. He won, we've been selected in four festivals for like best music video, music video. The work that he did, it's like a 5-minute animation music video that he did by himself.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
So that's like month of work. It's like titanic what he did.
It's
just amazing. So please go check it out. It's on YouTube
and
let me know what you think.
Yes.
And follow.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have one last question. Track number 11 on this album is called Mean World Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about?
Well, Mean World Syndrome is a syndrome that I've learned about. It's people, often it's people that live in countries that are really safe, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
that, you know, that are not like in war state mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. sit wealthy mm-hmm. people, but it's people that are watching way too much TV, I would mm-hmm. say. And it's, well, it's actually the influence of the media and mm-hmm. how the media depicts the world as really dangerous and really, really mean to you, you know?
Yeah.
And so they infuse fear in everyone. And it's a real syndrome that actually people have. And they tend to stay at home and just don't go anywhere, don't trust anyone, don't do anything because mm-hmm. they're afraid to get out of their space, their house, because the world is mean and the world is dangerous and everything's bad is going to happen to them. And yeah, the ironic stuff is that they live in places where it's safe. So and it's an actual real syndrome. So to me, on that song, I wanted to write about how one person having this syndrome would describe the word and what they would say. And to me, it's just because I always talk about, you know, the society and the media and how everything's, you know, well, it's complicated, but let's not debate about that.
I actually want to talk more about that,
because
I find that interesting. And you know, because you're an artist, I mean, you talk about that stuff, you talk about you're also on social media having to promote yourself.
Yeah.
So how do you sort of like balance all of that out, like with the kind of artist that you are and having to live in a world where it's like go, 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 and it's capitalist, you know, capitalistic. You are using a platform that's also used to spread the fear that you're talking about as well. Like it can be used for that. It's used for a lot of good things, but it can be used for a lot of bad things as well. So how do you personally, as an artist, find a balance between who you genuinely are and the world that you work in?
To be honest, I always say that if I wasn't doing this job, if I wasn't doing music, I would probably quit social media altogether, because sometimes it is too much. I mean, yeah, it's we're addicted, of course, but we're also alienated. It could be dangerous. Then the only thing, the way to deal with it, to me, it's just to try and counterbalance. So I'm just trying to talk about I'm just trying to be as real as I can. So not to pretend I'm like, you know, woo, all the time, like living my best life, oh, yay, you know. I'm just not trying to do that, even if, you know, sometimes you post like good things and people might say like, oh yeah, pretending or whatever. But I also have a song that talks about burnout. Still Alive talks about depression, that it was because of the burnout. You know, they are linked together. So I'm not afraid of sharing the deep and also bad things that happened to me. So I'm just trying to be real and not not run into that race of fakeism, stuff, and pretending, you know, my life is awesome every day, you know. No, I'm just not trying to do that. So I just want to be honest as possible. And yeah, it's hard because it's social media. There's no link with the others, you know. You're only posting. Now we are talking, you're answering, you know, I'm answering question, we're talking to each other. Once you're in front of your screen, you're like, you're not talking to someone.
No.
We pretend we are, actually you're just posting something, and then the person who will see it will receive something, but I don't know. That maybe you can talk through the comments or stuff. So I tried just to talk with my fans and my community to have like a real dialogue. But I try to be honest, and I also try to not spend too much time on it. So now I'm working with a friend of mine who is a great community manager.
Yeah.
So she's helping me with doing the posting and all of that.
I see. Okay.
And yeah. That was really important to me because at some mm-hmm. at some point I was like, well, it looked like my job would be being an influencer instead of being a musician, because you spend so much time, it is so time consuming that at some point you're like, I'd rather be making music, you know, because that's what I do actually. And you know, now more content and content and content. So now I'm just batch doing content sometimes, just live stuff. I'm like, you post it whenever you want, you feel fit. And when I have some stuff I want to talk about, you know, the song that went out and all of that, I just write my caption myself and just say what I want to say. It might be something cheerful or something hurtful, but I try as much as I can to be optimistic. So even if I talk about, you know, burnout and depression and all that, in the end, it talks about resilience because I'm still here. Mm. It talks about how it is important not to, well, to talk about those things, you mm-hmm. know, mental mm-hmm. health and everything. It mm-hmm. is important because everyone, and especially those last year or this past years with the COVID situation and everything, I mean, it had a big impact on everyone, you know? We have to talk about it. We shouldn't be pretending that everything is fine with this fucked up world and that, you know? So let's talk about it and actually, it makes us more human, and I think it's a way to humanize this dehumanizing platforms. So that's the only thing that I try to do, put more humanity into it if we can. At least I try.
You've touched on such good things, especially as an artist, because that's what we battle with. We battle with having to, the more likes you get, the better it is out there, the more famous, or, you know, difference between famous, success, etc. So you've touched on really good things. And then as you were speaking, and you said that, you know, that was an album that came out in 2021. I mean, what you've spoken about, like you said, God, everyone was in COVID. Everyone was locked down. And even in the pretty world that we live in, I know Australia and Perth, we're like that. I was fearful. So, and that's very, very scary. And that the media controls of that. How do you get out of that? And especially through your art. So thank you for sharing what you just said. It speaks volumes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I really enjoyed that interview.
Me too.
There was a lot of things that were like eye-opening, like things that I think about, and I this was super interesting for me. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for hosting me.
BJX. Thank you, Larry. Yay! Kristani, linking us up. And thank you to Lisa,
who was
kind enough to join us today, and she'll be joining us again sometime in the future.
Anytime you want me, I'm here.
Nice. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Bye. See ya.
The tide is coming in, yet I am standing still. The fluid rises up like the raw sap of a tree, and in the heartbeat I feel my feet rising off the ground. How do I know I've survived? How do I know I'm alive? When everything has lost its glow, how do I know I'm alive? How do I know I've survived? I see a light, I wanna know, is it the end of this show? Flesh is dissolving, yet I'm not feeling a thing. My mind's decomposing. Can anybody help? Can anybody stop this? I see my heartbeat
sit in the back seat? Who's driving all this mess? How do I know I've survived? How do I know I'm alive? When everything has lost its glow?